up and welcome back to 24 minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I'm Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are getting it on in the ring as we talk about A24's latest release, The Iron Claw.
The true story of the inseparable Von Erich brothers who made history in the intensely competitive world of professional wrestling in the early 1980s. We are lucky enough to have a huge wrestling guy, huge movie guy, Liam Crowley from comicbook.com. He's joining us for this episode of the pod. Liam, welcome to the show. How's it going, man?
Ethan and Ben, it is great to see you both. I've had the pleasure of being on the show before, but I feel like there has been no movie more appropriate to get me on for than The Iron Claw. When you were doing your intro right there, it reminded me that you don't necessarily only tackle new releases. Like, you mostly, with 24 minutes of A24, have dove into the catalog of A24 movies. This is the first time I'm here for an upcoming slash new A24 release. It's a wrestling movie. It has Troy Bolton in it. It's a perfect harmony right now.
Good to go. I love it.
That's why I wanted you on this show, Liam, because I knew this was going to be your episode. This was going to be your movie, and I figured there would be no better guest to join us. So, The Iron Claw, newest movie from A24. We're not going to do any housekeeping. We're not going to do any news. Ben, we went through that last year. Can I quickly, very fast sidebar, any additional thoughts on Alex Garland's Civil War? Because I'm still hung up on the budget. I got to be honest with you.
I'm still really looking forward to it. I'm still upset that you compared it to Don't Look Up. But other than that, like, I think it's going to be good. I'm excited.
Liam, have you seen the trailer for Civil War?
I have, and I can tell you right now that I'm looking forward to the movie and not looking forward to being on Twitter.
That's a good take. That's a very good take. I stand by that. The Iron Claw, newest movie from A24, in theaters nationwide, December 22nd, so the day that this episode is going to be released. We have all been lucky enough. There's been some pre-screenings going around the country. We've been able to kind of hop on them here and there. So we've all seen the movie. I at least highly recommend you go check this movie out. Let's just start with our general thoughts, Liam. Of course, I'll toss it to you first. You're the wrestling guy. Fill me in. What did you think of this movie, and what's your connection, if any, to, you know, the Von Erich brothers and the story at hand?
Yeah, so I loved this movie. It is my favorite movie of the year. I gave it a perfect 5-star rating. I wrote the review for comicbook.com. I can't say enough glowing things about this movie. For me, any movie, whether it be a popcorn blockbuster or an art house awards grabber, needs to hit on two things: emotion and stakes. And this movie excelled at both of those elements so profoundly. I've only seen this film once, but I think about it all the time. And I just going back into my mind and remembering how I felt in certain scenes, I'm still able to tap into those emotions, get those same chills, get those same water in my eyes. And that's special, man. I saw this movie, I want to say 2, maybe 3 weeks ago now. And the fact that it's still at the forefront of my mind shows you the type of legs thing is going to have. I'm not even talking about box office legs, I'm just talking about cultural legs. I see this movie, something I compare it to immediately is a film like Whiplash. And I say that because they're two very different films, but Whiplash, for whatever reason, it only came out in, I want to say, 2016 or 2017. It finds its way onto those contemporary 100 essential films you have to watch before you die lists all the time. And it's so new and it's so niche, right? It's not in your face. It doesn't have a giant budget. It has very talented actors in it, but talented actors that are not there for a paycheck. They're putting in a super great performance. And I see a lot of the same parallels with The Iron Claw. I think in 2-3 years' time, we're going to start to talk about this movie on lists like that. If you consider yourself a fan of film, you need to see The Iron Claw. To answer your second question, my personal connection to it, I didn't really know the Von Erichs on a personal level. I was aware of them. If you're a wrestling fan for more than 2 years, the name Von Erich is going to come up and you're going to at least be familiar with it. The same way that every kid knows that Darth Vader is Luke's father before ever seeing Star Wars. If you're a fan of wrestling, you at least know peripherally who the Von Erichs were. We're in spoiler territory now, correct?
Yep. Full spoilers. Here's your warning.
I knew everyone was going to die except for Kevin. I didn't know how they were going to die. And beyond that, the one connection I have is there's a professional wrestling promotion called TNA, Total Nonstop Action. And they have an annual show called Slammiversary, I want to say this was like 2014, 2015, and they had it in Texas. And during one of the pre-show matches, Marshall and Ross Von Erich, who are Kevin Von Erich's real life sons, well, aren't in the movie because they obviously hadn't been born yet. They're wrestlers today, but very much on like the lower independent totem pole. They wrestle essentially for fun. They're not trying to make it a career or anything. They wrestled on the pre-show and classic wrestling shenanigans. Interference happened. Up there, they're outnumbered, and who comes out from the crowd but Mr. Kevin Von Erich in the flesh. He was like sick. He was like 52 or 53 at this point, and he gets in the ring and he was looking as spry as ever. I'll have to send you guys this clip after we're done recording. And seeing that moment and hearing what commentary was saying about him being like, God bless the Von Erichs, what a legend, he's still got it, and the roar of the crowd, I didn't know at that point what a reaction like that meant to that family. And then after watching this movie and understanding like the Von Erichs are treated with such delicacy whenever they show face in a wrestling ring, in a wrestling segment at all, because everyone who's in on the business knows their story, knows what they went through, and makes that extra effort to ensure that they're cared for. So yeah, that's my like little bit of a personal connection. And again, on the movie front, I really cannot say enough good things.
Yeah,
I love that. I'm the only guy without a wrestling connection here. So Ben, do you want to follow that up? Because I know you're into wrestling and you were greatly looking forward to this movie specifically because it is A24. It is like kind of one of the more showy A24 movies of the year for sure. Now that we're kind of in award season and things like that, what did you think? And you know, your connection to the Von Erichs.
I mean, I thought this was a fantastic movie. If you had told me beginning of 2023 that Troy Bolton was going to get you to cry in the theater multiple times, I'd be like, hold on, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I like Zac Efron, but like, there's just, I don't how. And then, you know, I mean, spoiler territories, but that line he delivers at the end, which I believe Kev said in real life in like a documentary, like he said that before. And so they took that from this, but even just to hear it back again, it's like, oh my God, like it's such a heartbreaking line to hear. It's the perfect way to end this thing. And I just thought, the movie was wonderful. I thought the entire cast was solid. Like the one thing you could nitpick if you want is no one can be 20-year-old Ric Flair except 20-year-old Ric Flair. Like, you know, like no one's going to do that. That's an impossible task. So that's the only thing, you know, that was kind of like, you know, maybe not solid, but that's no blame to the actor at all. But yeah, I thought the film was great. It was beautiful, wonderfully shot. Sean Durkin, the director, I'd only seen one other thing, Marcy May Marlene from him, which is it's a very different film for sure. Kind of about like escaping a cult and going back into your family. So like I was surprised when the name popped up. I'm like, oh, he did this. Like I did not know that actually before I went in. I just had no clue like who had done it all. So I thought the cast was great. Everyone was perfect in here. My connection with the Von Erichs, I'd say the early 2000s, whatever, like that was the peak of it was the Raw's War era and WCW, like Monday Night Nitro, like that's when I was like in my peak wrestling days. And so we're talking about still, you know, like we're getting the Crow Sting and we're getting like Ric Flair and all that kind of stuff. And I knew of the Von Erichs, but I think I knew more of the people who had like had connection with them. And then within the last few years, Vice do a series called The Dark Side of the Ring, and I watched theirs on the Von Erichs, and that's when I realized like, oh shit, this story is like intense. So when I saw they were making this movie, I just kind of drew back to that. I was like, that's going to be so interesting to see that story told because it's such a heartbreaking story. This family was all about wrestling, and just like to watch them kind of like fall apart the way that they did and the way everything happens. So that's really my connection to them. This is a great film. I haven't like rated it yet on Letterboxd, but this is like a 5-star film. Like it's so good.
I don't know any of those words that you said. Cool. I think one of them was Nitro, and that was pretty cool.
That is a cool word.
So I have like no wrestling connection to this, and so I am kind of coming at this movie with a different perspective. Not negatively. I think this is. Is absolutely unquestionably one of the best movies of the year. I currently have it at number 6 on my list, and I've seen almost 90 new releases this year, and I've been trying to get to 100 and like cracking through some of the big hitters. This movie is is really, really special to me, not from the wrestling perspective, but there is a moment, and you guys have said it, we're in full spoiler territory here. So I did not know any of the Von Erich story. I had no idea what this family was. I didn't know what they meant to wrestling. I didn't know that anybody was going to die. I had no idea how this was going to shake out. And I did that on purpose, that I kept myself from that information. I had only ever seen the trailer to the film. I wanted to go in kind of as blind as possible, just as kind of like a social experiment a little bit, and just like see what this movie did to me. Ben, you're right on. Like, everybody, everything that I heard from everybody was like, Zac Efron, watch out. Like, he's going to make you cry. And I went in, I was like, bullshit. Like, there's just no way. Like, I just like, that's not going to happen. So that brings me to my very personal connection to this movie. This is the hardest and the most authentically I've cried in a movie theater in my life. So Jeremy Allen White's character in this movie, Carrie, he ends up losing a leg. My best friend passed away in January. I'm shaking a little bit talking about this, but passed away in January. He was an amputee. He also had lost a leg. We get this very pivotal scene in the final 15 minutes of the movie where Carrie and David and the younger brothers are kind of in the great beyond, if you will, in a better place, they kind of call it. And the very, very first thing that happens in that scene is Carrie walks on grass with two bare feet, and he kind of takes a little bit of a skip, and then he looks and he smiles, and life is perfect. Life is glorious. He's reunited with family, and he feels confident in his physicality and these types of things. And anybody who's lost a very, very close loved one might know, like, that type of crying is different than like crying because of something else. Like, it's a different cry than Past Lives, right? It's a different cry than La La Land or something to that effect. This is like hyperventilating, like I can't control myself because that struck a chord so deep within my soul. And for that, like, Sean Durkin, just out of the park, incredible way to visualize what was going on in each of the Von Erich brothers' minds with that type of trouble that they were going through. And for me, actually, I don't know, Ben or Liam, if this was the case that you're screening at all, but when I got out of the movie, there was actually an A24 rep there that was asking people what they thought of the film. And so I kind of shared my experience, and then I tried to like kick it back into critic mode and be like, the pacing was really good. I thought this was really smart how they montaged this big time period. And like, I thought Zac Efron was good and all of these things. But I thought that was pretty neat. And then I got to share my story with them. And I think this movie, Liam, like you said, I saw it a week ago, and I have not like gone, you know, 8 hours without thinking about it, basically. And what's delivered on screen. It leads me to a question for you guys. Thinking about how great this ensemble is. You have Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, Harris Dickinson. These are the big ones, the kind of the trifecta of the film. Liam, I'll ask you first, who for you won the movie? Because we go down each path of these guys and spend different amounts of time and connection and troubles with each of them. I'm curious in your eyes who you thought won the movie.
So I'm going to stall for a little bit as I pull up the cast, because the man who played the brother who is more musically inclined, I want to give him a specific shout out.
Stanley Simons.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for correcting me there. Stanley Simons, I wouldn't say stole the movie. I like to, you know, give the contrarian answer, not the popular answer, but it's hard not to say Zac Efron.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing too, and I wrote this in my review on comicbook.com. The other thing that really needs to land with me for a movie, in order for a movie to work beyond emotion and stakes, which are kind of the two narrative checkpoints, is I need to lose myself in the character. I can't see the movie star first. That's why Napoleon didn't really work for me. The entire time I just saw Joaquin Phoenix. Every time I heard his voice, I heard Arthur Fleck. And like, I know that that's not his like career defining role, but it's the one that's most recent in my mind. It's the one he won an Oscar for. And when he looks the same and when he talks the same, I'm not losing myself. I'm not seeing Napoleon. I'm seeing Joaquin Phoenix. in a French battle armor and stuff like that. On the flip side, after about 5 minutes of spending time with Zac Efron's Kevin Von Erich, Zac Efron was nowhere to be. All I saw was Kevin Von Erich.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge testament to how much stride Zac Efron has made as a thespian actor, not just someone who looks good on camera, not someone who's can be your muscle in Baywatch or can be your comedic guy in The Greatest Beer Run. Someone who's here to act and who's not necessarily here to win an award, because I don't think that anyone took this project as award season bait per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I it's clear that they realized at some point in production that they had someone special on their hands. And Zac Efron's an actor I respect a ton, because like Joseph Gordon-Levitt is another one that comes to mind. These guys could easily be pumping out 2 to 3 movies a year, making a ton of money, being giant box office successes, but they would rather be more selective with their project. And they're much more hard. They want to hard define their legacy. They don't want to just pump out stuff for the sake of working. And Zac Efron choosing this movie, when he signed on last summer, that's when I realized that this wasn't just going to be any other wrestling biopic. This was going to be something special, because he's not someone that just joins anything. Again, Stanley Simons, that character really spoke to me, because in my later years, as I transition a little bit into adulthood, I've become a lot more athletically inclined. The gym is like a huge part of my life, but it didn't always used to be. And I grew up around people who you felt like the odd one out. You weren't the one who was mixing it up with sports and stuff like that, or hitting the weights. And so I saw a lot of my younger self in Stanley Simons' Von Erich brother. And man, especially too, when how his story turns out, how they kind of like force him to eventually get into the ring. And it's clear that wasn't his calling. Like you could tell by his music that was his talent, and that's what he should have been all in on. But for whatever reason, like, I think the term toxic masculinity is way overdone in today's society, because I think that it almost it takes this idea of masculinity and makes you almost feel bad for it if you want to be masculine. However, there was the right like portrayal of toxic masculinity in this movie of the Von Erich father and how neglecting the son that wasn't going to follow the family business, so to speak, and how it cost him, you know, his happiness and his life ultimately. So yeah, big shout out to Stanley Simon, big shout out to you, Zac Efron, and also Jeremy Allen White was awesome. The father too, like I said, I hated his guts for a lot of moments, and that's a testament to a good performance. Lily James I thought was great. There's really not many misses in this, guys, that's awesome to say for a year-ending ensemble picture.
You bring up Fritz. I want to come back to Fritz Von Erich, played by Holt McCallany. I think there's a lot to unpack there, so I just want to put a pin in that really quick. Ben, for you, who won the movie?
Again, it's hard not to say Efron. I think he blew me away. Like you said, we're all reading on Twitter how great he is, and oh my God, he's doing wonderful. Before, you know, we see this movie, or I mean, I guess I can speak for myself. That's what happened. And then going into it, it's like, oh my God, everybody was right. You know, it's like they weren't just overhyping this. Like, he actually was wonderful in this. But I do want to shout out Harris Dickinson. I thought he was great.
That's
he
my boy.
David.
Harris Dickinson is having a glow up, and I'm so excited about it.
He was awesome. I mean, people may recognize him from Triangle of Sadness, which we talked about last year. But I thought he was wonderful, and just wonderful as David, like in this relationship with Kevin, you know, cause all of a sudden David surpasses him, and now he's the one that's going for the title fight, and just the empathy that he kind of shows Kevin is like, no, he didn't mean it. You know, like, it's all good. Like, we'll figure it out, you know? And Kevin's like, no, he doesn't make mistakes. Like, you're the next one. But you could see the love between the brothers, which was just like the bond throughout this entire film. It was just the through line. It's just how much they all love each other. And I think it's one of the best scenes, even with Kevin, when he's on that first date. It's like, what do you want to do? He's like, I don't know, just be with my brothers. Like, I don't care what we're doing. Yeah. I just want to be with them. It's like, man, these guys really love each other. That's like, that's amazing. And we just, I don't know, that just, it shows throughout the whole film. But Harris Dickinson would probably be the one for me that I would go with.
Yeah, I think if people enjoyed Harris Dickinson in this movie, I highly recommend you go check out the movie Scrapper, which is out of Sundance this year. A great total pivot from this character as like a very very loving, empathetic father to basically to an estranged daughter. Really great flick. I love Jeremy Allen White. I think for me, like he did kind of steal the show. Obviously, narratively, a lot kind of takes off once we get the introduction of his character of Carrie, and that's like where things really start to get a bit more whiplashy, if you will, of like we're really entering this other echelon of like we're all fighting for maybe what dad wants and what dad sees we can do, and the rankings are always changing as we learn very quickly in the movie, and these types of ideas. I do also want to give a shout out to Maura Tierney as the mother of Doris. I think her scene in particular, and I know we're going to do True Cinema and kind of roll through the movie quickly, but her scene when Carrie, I believe it is when Carrie dies at the very end, of her looking at her dress, basically saying like, I can't put this on. I can't, they'll know I can't do this. It takes a very special actress to be able to like hold that frame with the power that she holds that frame with. I know Lily James joins in on that, but they're, is something really magnetic about her when she is on screen. And I think the fact that we all kind of pivoted to other people speaks to this ensemble. I think it's really a sensational kind of like mixture. Liam, you mentioned how this movie is kind of similar to Whiplash, and I agree. And that's one of the notes that I wrote down. I give this movie 4.5 stars, and I obviously really, really like it a lot. I think the one thing that I was looking for was more of like a hyper specific Whiplash scene of, you know, throwing the chair at Neiman basically and saying like, this is what you have chosen, this is the life you have. And I think I was looking for something like that with Fritz. I know this is, you know, biographical, and I'm not sure source material or what the director chose to stick to or not and what have you. But I thought a moment like that would have been really sensational in a movie like this, and really kind of taken it to that Whiplash level. And it would have kind of sustained the idea of like, this is the full gauntlet. Like we are not holding any punches, like no pun intended, but like, this is how intense it really was. Speaking of Fritz quickly, I loved that you kind of have the dual narratives going on with this movie of seeing everything through Kevin's eyes or Carrie's eyes, while also seeing everything through Fritz's eyes, and understanding that this is really just the compounding resolution of generational trauma and slash regret slash indecisiveness slash what have you, that the only way he sees fit to comp what he missed out on to get the belt in his house is to send his kids down the exact same path, no matter what the cost might be. And I think that really does kind of come up nicely in the very end with Carrie and his death, and like that he, Fritz didn't put that together of like, this is the headspace that my son might be in. And the constant reminding of like, you guys are brothers, you figure it out, you talk to him, you deal with it. I thought that was really, really smart dialogue there. True Cinema, should we go through? Do we have any other high-level thoughts before we rip through this?
I guess on your point about waiting for that scene of throwing the you know, the drum at Neiman, or because that movie's so fresh in my head, I watched it for the first time last Sunday. Wow, a week ago.
Whiplash? First time?
Yeah, I know. I had never gotten around to it, and I was staying with my friend in New York City, and we were perusing. We watched The Killer the night before.
Fire.
New Fincher, great movie. And I told him, like, he had never heard of Whiplash, and I kind of gave him the spark notes, and he was like, might be a little intense for right now. But we both agreed, like, it's a hell of a movie to go into like a busy work week with, of just head down, get the work done, like tap into that full potential. And yeah, there are a couple scenes for me specifically. It's the dinner table scene when they're going through like, oh, D3 collegiate athlete, and he's like, well, I'm in the most prestigious music school and I just got added to the most prestigious teacher's band, but screw me, I guess. Like that's a scene that will always stick with me. Sure. When you're saying you're waiting for that scene in The Iron Claw, the only pushback I have on that is, again, I do not know the story of the Von Erichs in and out, and I do know they took one massive creative liberty and that they kind of combined one brother.
That's what I've heard.
Stanley Simons' character is kind of the combination of two. So they clearly did take creative liberties, but also I'm curious to hear, because Kevin Von Erich is very much still alive, I'm curious to hear if he had any type of, not creative input, but input in the sense of where he was okay with them stretching things and where he wanted things to be completely accurate. Because if Fritz never got to that point of, like, he was toxic at times, like when David dies and he's just like, we need someone to take his spot, and, you know, the body's not even cold yet, it's like, oh man,
dude,
naturally in a fictional character, that's something where if that's taking place at the end of act one, you would expect him to now get violent or have those internal emotions boil over by act three, and he never does that. I believe, again, it's been a couple weeks, Kevin tackles Fritz towards the end of the movie, right?
Yeah, like and essentially tries to choke him strangle him to death, and essentially refuses to do so by the end of it.
So they do scrap towards the end. So we do get some sort of physicality, but, like, I agree, a character like Fritz should become a full blown villain rather than like Shades of Grey. But if that's not accurate to who Fritz was in real life, I feel like that'd be a huge betrayal to the Von Erich story.
Yeah, I think, like, to argue my own point, it might make Fritz a stronger villain, quote unquote, because he is so under the surface, because that is what the driving force of the brothers is. Like, they know he might get to that point. And maybe as an audience, like, narrative device of, like, the brothers have yet to see him really get violent or really get to that particular echelon or level, but the possibility is always there. And we feel that as an audience. And I think that's why we bring it up of, like, he could get there at any moment in time. Like, things could get really hyper violent or things could get really off the rails. And maybe it's that just consistent fear. Let's not ever bring him to that place because we don't even want to risk it. What that place might be. I think it is. I think it could be narratively pretty smart. I think it's funny that you bring up the dinner scene in Whiplash the dinner scene in this, because Whiplash has a very similar dinner scene where Neiman is essentially doing the same thing. And he's like, oh, wow, you guys are cool. You guys are just wrestlers. Like, I'm at the best fucking school in the country. And he kind of takes everybody to task on it. That, a little bit different energy than this dinner scene. But I think a lot of similarities there in how we kind of use that narrative idea of let's break bread together and join. And then really break apart our bonds at that same location that we do that. Ben, any final big thoughts?
No, let's just get into true cinema. There's just so much we could talk about, but yeah, I want to get into true cinema.
There is. Okay, number one, the breakfast scene. This is essentially our very first introduction to the Von Erichs and everything. I will say, as soon as Zac Efron, like, rolled out of bed, I thought this opening shot of Efron and just, like, literally Durkin just being like, look how fucking ripped this guy is. So elite and really smart and really great character, like, total involvement. Because at that point, you're just like, damn, like, this is not Troy Bolton. This is, we're in a new era. We're in a new phase. This is the guy. They all have breakfast together, obviously eating like wrestlers. And this is the first time we hear Fritz basically tell everybody, like, these are my favorites. You're number one, you're number two, three, and four. And the rankings can always change. And I think from that moment, all bets are kind of off the table where you're just like, oh, cool. So, like, we're really psychotic and, like, we don't, this is definitely toxic masculinity and how, like, we rank our children. And that's cool. Like, I think that sets up, obviously, the next hour and 50 minutes that we go through. Liam, any thoughts on the breakfast scene here?
Yeah, it was great. Like I said, the gym is a huge part of my life. And when Zac Efron rolled out of bed, I was like, oh man, I need to go on his men's health interview right now and see what his split is. Because you thought his Baywatch physique was impressive. Good lord, this dude is bulky. And yeah, like you said, it's so funny because, like, looking back on it, it's so jovial, but it also is peppered with all the breadcrumbs of, like, the problems that are gonna arise. So I think that this, like, thinking back to it like that, that is a huge testament to the film's rewatchability.
Yeah, I think it's a great call. I think even leading up to the very first stuff we get with him going on the run and working out and stuff, like, the emotion you see on his face when he's doing those reps is just like, it's intense. And I think it's this mix of like, maybe like wanting to show off for his dad to show that he can do all this stuff, but almost like from a place of fear too. Of like, I have to maintain this like physique, this position that I'm at within the company. I thought it was great. And then, yeah, leading into the breakfast scene with him just kind of picking on the little brother and stuff was awesome.
It's a lot of bacon, man. They're cooking up a lot of bacon.
Gotta get that protein.
That's wild. Liam, you're a gym guy. Is that what's your go-to? You an egg guy, your bacon guy, whole thing?
Well, eggs are good because eggs are usually about 4 grams of protein per fried egg. So you can stack like four and get, you know, a meal's worth. But man, I'll tell you this much. In order to gain weight for me, because just of my height and metabolism and my goals, I need to have about a gram of protein per pound of body weight per day, which comes out to about 200 grams a day, which when you break that down without protein shakes, like, you're having hearty meals. So it's a full-time commitment, and just seeing how they would eat, I was like, yeah, no, that's what it takes. As someone who's trying to do it firsthand, like, a lot of bacon, but there are better sources of protein to take, that's for sure.
I've been getting beach ready. I'm hitting the beach in a couple of months, and there we go. I've been hitting the gym and getting on that protein diet, and it is really, honestly, not a lot of fun. It's just finding things that are really high in protein. A lot of tuna.
Yogurt's great. Yogurt will be your best friend.
Yeah. Okay, pro move. I'm sure the Von Erichs ate yogurt. There's got to be. Then maybe that's our big criticism of the movie. We didn't see Von Erichs eating any yogurt. No, no good.
There's a brand I'll put you on. There's a brand called Ratio Protein Yogurt, 25 grams per little container.
That's a hack. Maybe I'll get into wrestling now. Maybe this is like my intro. Maybe I'm the guy.
Oh, I'm about it.
Okay, next true cinema moment. David's intro into the ring. Kevin is the guy, and then basically their father brings David into the ring. This is really the first time we kind of see the showiness of like what the show is going to be. All the fans that are outside, a really cool wonder that takes us through the parking lot with a cooler into the doors. I thought really inventive, kind of energetic stuff. And this is where we meet Pam at the end of this, played by Lily James, and kind of leads us into our next scene. But I like this intro for David, and I thought pacing wise, like, this movie worked really well. Because it does cover like a huge span in 2 hours, and I'm sure there's things that are left out. But I thought it worked quickly enough to build us enough leeway in the final act where we sit with the decisions to sell the company, and we sit with the death of Carrie and these things that are so important and pivotal, because we have such a great energy burst, kind of on the onset. And seeing Harris Dickinson like in the ring, I thought was a big win. I know I said it, but like, Harris Dickinson, that's my boy. And like, I love to see him on the big screen. Ben, any thoughts on the scene?
Oh, I think it was wonderful because it also just kind of showed David's mic work and his charisma and how comfortable he is, which is such a big part of wrestling as well. Like, you got to be able to entertain the crowd and not just with your physicality. And we see that that's like Kevin's probably shortcoming here, is like, he's not comfortable on the mic, as big as he is, as like, you know, Herculean as he looks and stuff like that. Like, he's got the body, but like, when it comes to just like really entertaining the crowd, he struggles with that. And I thought that was a great scene. I think it was, I don't know if it was this one or later on, but when Kevin's like, you didn't have to do that or whatever, he's like, I was just trying to help you, you know, like, David's like, I just wanted to help. That was it. But you could tell it's an insecurity for him.
Yeah. Liam, any thoughts?
Yeah. I love the wonder, like you said. And also just me and my friend who I took to this press screening, we were like, man, I wish the territorial days were still alive and well, because if we had like a local wrestling scene like this in Boston, I would go to these shows every weekend. And I hope that this introduces people to just wanting to dive deep into wrestling lore, because it's before network TV was all the rave and everything, there were like territories and leagues. Yeah. Every city had something like the Sportatorium. So it was really cool to see recreated here.
That's pretty sick. I think the scene also does a really important job of recognizing, or at least like pointing out, like, this is Kevin's thing. And I think everybody knows that it's Kevin's thing, and like, he's next in line for the throne, right? And so this introduction of David into the ring immediately puts that at risk. And we see that kind of it follows that storyline. But I think it's a really interesting insight into like the dichotomy of Kevin and his father and then Kevin and his brothers and where Kevin lives within that kind of connection of those two parts of his family is really interesting. I mentioned the breakfast with Pam. Ben, you mentioned this is like basically where Kevin's just like, I just want to hang out with my bros and just like wrestle. Like, I think that sounds great. And I will say, I think Lily James is great in the movie. Her character, at least in this scene, really awkward because like she just goes over to him and is just like hugging him and is like, it's okay. And it's like, I don't think you're understanding what he's feeling right now. Like, I don't think this is what he needs. And obviously she's coming at it from the side of like, I want to either, you know, I either want to hook up with him or I want to date him or eventually marry him or what have you. Do you think, or do you know, like, was Kevin Von Erich, was he a big enough name for someone to be like, oh, I want to get in for the fame or like the potential fame? Or was this like an earnest thing? Because I just don't know.
I think it was earnest. And I say that just because if he's a big name locally, that means nothing on the national stage.
Mm.
And from what I gathered from Lily James's character, because again, I don't really know her character in real life all that well, unless she's like listening to the Wrestling Observer, going on cagematch.net. I don't think she's like, man, Kevin Von Erich ranked number 113 on the PWI 500 last year. Yeah. So there's a good chance he makes it to New York eventually. Yeah, I think it was. And I, it's funny. It's like, you know, film is subjective. I loved that because I thought it was a very like fresh dynamic of like, you know, the guy being approached by the girl and the guy being like, I don't know what to do. And her being like, this is when you give me my number. I thought it was a sweet start to their relationship.
Yeah. I had the thought too, like, when has anyone that's not his brother hugged him?
Yeah.
You know, like in the scene, because it's just like, dad's not hugging him, that's for fucking sure, you know? And when he goes to talk to mom at one point, she's like, that's what your brothers are for. You know, it's like, hey, I need to talk to you. It's just like, both parents seem like, no, you guys figure everything out for yourself. So I took it earnestly too. But yeah, I thought it was a good scene.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call out. And obviously pivotal in understanding Kevin's character and getting our payoff at the very end and understanding how he got to that place.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie coming home. This is Jeremy Allen White's character. And I think a really important role for Jeremy Allen White to be seen having, like coming off of The Bear, obviously, for a couple of seasons now and getting on the big screen and getting a little bit of buzz of like, oh, could he disrupt the best supporting actor race and these types of things? I think he's really good for him in a career sense. Rocking the shit out of his wig, just really immaculate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He misses out on the Summer Olympics because of the tensions with the Soviet Union, and then in 1980 Summer Olympics, basically the United States doesn't go. Pretty heartbreaking stuff, and like on top of that, exceptionally heartbreaking to see their dad just be like, you're not going to the Olympics, you should wrestle. And it's like, oh my guy, like he's been training for years to like go to the Olympics, like he was going to rep the U.S. And now you're just like, oh, you should do this local wrestling thing that, you know, gives us a shot at bringing the title to our house is pretty degrading for like Carrie as an athlete, I feel like. Ben, anything on this scene?
No, I mean, yeah, it was heartbreaking and just seeing how that all played out. And then, like you said, dad just being like, all right, well, it's time to move on. I will say this was one of the I don't know if it's funny, but like, Carrie Von Erich was like the heartthrob of the family. He was just like, some might call him the Liam Crowley of the group, you know? But he's like, he's 6'2", muscular, just a handsome dude. And I love that they got Jeremy Allen White, who's 5'7", to play this character. Because like every scene, he's like hugging his brothers, you know, like stuff like that. It's like when you watch some of the old footage, like Carrie was huge. He was so tall. But I think he played it wonderfully with a lot of emotion, especially after obviously the accident happens. But
Just to add on to that, too, something that I found interesting about Fritz, right, is he's portrayed as the antagonist. It's weird to call him the villain because like he operates in that shade of gray, but the best villains are the ones who see themselves as the heroes of their own story.
Mm-hmm.
And when Fritz pitches the idea to Kerry of joining wrestling, I don't think it comes from a place of malice, and I don't think it comes from a place of selfishness of bring the belt home. I think he looks at it as you have all this clearly defined athleticism, not even athletic potential. Like, you are already a world-class athlete. Rather than, you know, wait for 4 years, let's put what you've been working towards something good. And what he automatically goes to is wrestling. So I, at least at that point in the movie, again, this is what makes it rewatchable. Now we're going to rewatch that scene completely differently. When I was watching it for the first time, I was like, that's a good father. Like, that's the one who's like, he's worked so hard for this goal. That goal somehow has the same, you know, similar athletic skill set to something he's super passionate about. Let's merge the two. And he doesn't even, he doesn't demand it. It's like a, it wasn't a question, but he was like, you should do this. And he left it up to him. So in that sense, again, rewatching it, a little bit different. But in the moment, I was like, oh, okay. Like, Fritz looking out for his guys.
Well, it's interesting too, because this is quite literally the family business. Like, he, because he runs at this point, right? He's running that wrestling group. So it's like, yeah, just come work with the family. You know, you've got the physique, you've got all that. So yeah, I think it definitely was earnest.
Kerry's lack of hesitation as well, I think, really speaks to like the power and really, like, you know, to be super dumb, but like the iron claw that Fritz has a hold on the family. Like, to pin them in this position and to apply the pressure when he feels it. And I know that's directly juxtaposed to what you said, Liam, but I think, like, that's how I received the scene, was just like, oh, wow. Okay, cool. So, like, he's looking out for the family business. He wants to take this potential, and he has one thing in mind. How do I get the belt to the house? And this is how I do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes the movie rewatchable and extra interesting, is because you can come at it with these two, like, this two-pronged narrative of, like, from Fritz and then from the brothers, and how we're dealing with generational trauma or lived-in trauma or everything that is happening to Kevin as we see the events roll out and how that compounds and all of these things. We mentioned Kerry joining the team. Six-man tag team montage. Fucking awesome montage. Really great. And I didn't know six-man tag team wrestling existed. I was entranced. I was just totally entranced. I was like, these guys are awesome. Really cool stuff.
It was so good. And it was like set to Tom Sawyer by Rush, which actually was Kerry's walk-in music. So I thought that was awesome. It's just such a great montage. Like, this is fucking fun. I just loved it all. I thought it was wonderful.
I've listened to that song every day since I've seen the movie. I kid you not. I just listened to it like an hour ago. Excellent tune.
It's so good. It's Rush. It's wonderful.
Yeah,
we listened to it on the car ride home, like, on loop, I think, four straight times. So yeah, that's a great one. It's also, that's the luxury of the territories, because they're not on national TV. They just use licensed music, and they're like, you're not gonna sue us because you don't know who we are. That's a plus.
That's how we operate here on the pod, Liam. We're just like, we're just under the radar. We can do whatever we want.
Exactly. DIY, baby. That's how we run it. Trios matches, six-man matches. Ethan, I'm going to put you on. I'll get you the Elite versus Death Triangle earlier this year. They had a best of seven. Oh, my God. Nice. But yeah, no, it was so cool. Also, it was cool to, I had the Leo Once Upon a Time in Hollywood like so many times in this movie. And when they worked the Freebirds, I was like, oh, my God. Michael P.S. Hayes is in this movie. And that was really cool. And the first match, I believe, has Bruiser Brody in it. And I'm just like, all these guys, and I'm like, damn, I didn't watch them live, but they're in the opening montage of every WWE show I watch. So there's that.
I loved the authentic intros that we get for pretty much every wrestling match that they have. With like the text and like the kind of TV in TV.
The neon and all that, yeah.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. Really smart, I think, choices to bring us into that world even more. This is kind of where the movie takes that dynamic, depressing turn, if you will, and things start to get a little bit soured. The first thing I have here on the list, David basically dying in Japan. He dies of a ruptured intestine. This takes place very soon after we realize that David is the guy. He's going to tour. He's going to get ready to compete for the belt, not Kevin. Kevin meets him in the bathroom, basically, I think at his wedding, if I'm not mistaken. While David is vomiting up blood, they share a very intimate moment of Kevin saying that David's going to be an uncle and Kevin's going to have a son. Really, really touching. And we realize something might not be right with David. Kevin basically tries to get him to not go to Japan and not finish out his tour. And then the next scene, we realize that David has passed away due to this ruptured intestine. And for me, that scene really hit on like Kevin's guilt. Like Kevin could have stopped that. He could have done something. He could have worked harder. He could have persuaded him better. He could have done something to make that not happen. And that's really the first domino of the huge dominoes that fall after the fact. And I thought it was really smart how just like, so it happened so quick. It's just out of nowhere. Like I was not prepared because I didn't know. I just had no idea that like all of a sudden David was dead. And I was just like, oh shit. Now I kind of see where we're going with this. And like things are going to get really bad really quickly. And I will just say, I love all of them dancing at Kevin's wedding. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really good stuff. And it's a really smart lead in to having that cold, concise cut with David leaving the narrative, because the final frame we get of the wedding is David dancing with such joy.
Yeah, that was a beautiful scene. The wedding was great. And then, like you said, it was devastating, even kind of knowing what was going to be coming. It was just such a devastating scene. And I was curious how it played for someone who was unfamiliar with the story. So like, it's good to hear that it worked. And yeah, just
shocking,
kind of set the tone for the rest of the movie. It's like, all right, I have a feeling it's not gonna be the only one. It's gonna be gone. So yeah, it was a great scene.
Yeah. And I'm talking about just a ridiculous drop of a falling action. You know, usually you see it on like the narrative, like a roller coaster. The falling action is pretty slanted. Usually like up slowly, we're getting there. No, it's like this. It's literally a death drop. Yeah. And yeah, from there, it's nothing but snowballing sadness.
Do either of you know, was this, I could look this up as well, but was this ruptured intestine, I assume from, was he was shooting something, was he using steroids or was that just the hard work on his body that like overtook him?
I am not sure specifically the circumstances of his death, but mm-hmm. I would not be shocked if he was juicing back then. There's a very famous steroid trial that happened in WWE in the 1990s and got resurfaced again in the 2000s. Basically, mm-hmm. today, if you get caught for any type of PEDs in WWE specifically, most big promotions have this regulation, but you get suspended for 30 days on the first violation, 90 days on the second, and third, I think, is immediate termination. So it's very strict. You're not allowed to in today's wrestling, because unfortunately there have been enough tragic tales, and I'm not sure if David Von Erich is one of them, but it wouldn't surprise me, because especially in the 80s,
yeah,
you know, guys got over by having the physique, and some people like it's so funny because some people would just be like, oh, they just want to take a shortcut and get ahead, and it's like, as someone who works towards it, eventually you reach a point where you're like, what more can I do naturally? Yeah. Like when do I start to like, all these other guys that are bigger than me, they're probably cheating. So should I also start to cheat? Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, if he is juicing in that situation, it's a problem, because obviously there's very dire side effects. But also too, it's not out of a shortcut. It's out of just desperation. Listen, I got to mm-hmm. make my dad proud, and I'm going to the land of the rising sun, which in wrestling is like going to Broadway. So yeah, you know, you gotta, you know, I that's something I gotta look more into.
Yeah,
I think the belief is that it was drug use. Wrestler found him and kind of like flushed all the stuff that was around, and then the family said it was due to something that happened in the ring. So that, I think that's like the belief of what happened. I don't know for sure. I don't know that they've ever definitively said exactly what it was, but that's kind of the lore around it, at least.
I had no idea he was only 25. I don't think the movie necessarily does a very clear job of calling out exactly how old they are. I don't know if it's really a necessity for the film, but I do think it makes it hit harder, right? The dude's 25 and he's feeling that pressure. And that's really our first insight into like, this could be kind of an amalgamation of like, of wrestling, yes, but also of home life, of inability to, you know, be honest with your family or your brothers or your mom or any of these other kind of outside sources. Next on the list, I have Kerry winning the NWA belt and then getting in a motorcycle accident. Again, I had no idea this was going to happen. Really great moment between Kerry and Kevin in the kitchen and giving us this idea that I think, you know, Liam, in your circumstance, you're coming off of becoming kind of the Percy Jackson guy going around social media right now. You were at the premiere, you're interviewing the cast, of this high of doing what you've always wanted to do. You've spoken this into existence for years now, and you're finally there. In Kerry's situation, he's been fighting for the belt for a long time, and the family has been fighting for the belt for a long time. He brings it home, and they share this tender moment where Kerry basically says, like, I don't know how to come down from this. I don't know how to restabilize, how I'm going to be normal and what to do. Ends up drinking some beers, and again, Kevin finds himself in the really ambiguous situation of what could I have done if maybe my upbringing was a little bit different, if we were a little bit more physical or emotional or honest with each other, if X, Y, and Z to stop him from going on his motorcycle and then proceeding to lose his leg. And we see him riding his motorcycle. We see the headlights, and the very next scene we get is him basically going into the kitchen, and the camera is a still shot on the fridge. Mm-hmm. And we see him come into the kitchen, and all of a sudden he's on crutches and he's missing a leg. And that hits a chord with me personally, but like truly shocked. And I think a really smart way to divulge that information of, again, like, we are on that high with Kerry, and then we're just getting a cliff drop off of like, oh, this guy's fucked. Like, it's done. It's gone. Like, what are we going to do next? And this is his life now. And I think plays a really big role, obviously, in the final act and what comes after this. But puts Kevin in another really guilty position that continues to eat him up inside. I love the scene. I think it's one of my favorites. It's not my true cinema, but it's one of my favorites.
It's a great scene, and I think it's shocking for everybody, because I don't believe it happened this fast in real life. So for it to happen, you know, the night that he won the belt, mm-hmm. I think it comes a shock to the people who's like kind of familiar with it, you know, and then obviously people who aren't, but it's so effective. I mean, we have 2 hours to tell a story. We don't need to like do everything, you know, verbatim by any means. And it works so well. And just seeing his struggle throughout the rest of the movie, like trying to wrestle again, which Kerry did, like he wrestled even after he lost his foot, which so was amazing. But just seeing how that impacted him and their relationship, and I thought it was really well done. It's a beautiful scene. It's pretty silent throughout the whole thing. And I thought it was so well done.
Yeah, this moment made me do the sit up, the hands on the head. That never happens for me. I'm not someone who in a theater like needs to like sell my reaction. Especially in the age of influencers, boy, have I seen people fabricate their reactions in a theater, and it is the worst. So I never like physically emote, and I just don't know what came over me. Literally sat up, hands on the head, because that's something I did not know whatsoever. I told you guys that I knew that everyone was going to die, but Kevin, I didn't know the circumstances surrounding it. So the second he was like, give me my keys on a couple beers, I was like, all right, this is it. We're not going to see Kerry again.
Right.
And then when he survived, I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's just a little twist. Like, I guess, you know, he'll die in another scene. And I had no anticipation that there was going to be anything more than the scratches on his back. And then when he comes into frame and he's missing the foot, it's like, oh man. And what makes it even more impressive is he goes on to be WWF Intercontinental Champion as an amputee. Good Lord, especially seeing how, you know, him first training with this new normal that he has to deal with and the pain he put himself through. And like you were saying, when it comes to when you reach that high, it's a skill to come down on it and manage it. And I'll tell you from my personal experience over this past week, I'm not stupid enough to turn to like drugs or alcohol to try to make that. But I will say that there have been times this weekend where I'm like refreshing notifications like a junkie, like, you know, like looking for that dopamine of like, are people still engaging with my content? And it's like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Like, you gotta step back and be like, this is gross. Like, you know, if you yourself are proud of what you did, that's all you really need. And yeah, Carrie constantly looking for other people for that satisfaction. And when that's not there, turning to the thrill of adrenaline on a motorcycle, or the high you get from drugs and alcohol, it's not healthy. It's not safe. It's not sustainable. And I think that was a really strong example of just kind of the side effects of fame, the side effects of success in general. Because like you said, when you reach that natural high, people just look to maintain that, and it's not in a healthy way. And there's immediate consequences, as seen with his accident.
I think it's a really smart insight again into like the installation of the lack of confidence that Fritz has instilled in every single one of his kids, of like, it's never enough and it never will be enough. Even if you get to where we are trying to get to, or where I want you to get to, that feeling of like accomplishment has never been taught, has never been talked about, or has never been felt. And so I think that is really interesting from Carrie's perspective of like, he did what he set out to do, but was it really what he set out to do? Was it what his dad wanted him to set out to do? And how does that overlay with like the personal emotion of the entire situation, and how he feels about that accomplishment? The next two I'm going to combine, Mike training. Basically, this is what Kevin is now officially on the outs of like the family. They'd rather just have like Mike start training and become a wrestler. He enters the ring. He injures his shoulder. He goes into a coma. And then a little bit later in the movie, we see him overdosing and walking out into a field, and the family finds him, and he is no longer with them. This, I thought, again, like a smart, interesting way to tackle a death, because there are so many deaths in this movie, or injuries, or like life-changing circumstances, that this is much more in line with like, oh, he overdosed and then like died hours later. Like, this is a slow release of like, we know exactly what's coming. We see it happening. We're living it. Yet we are on the string because we're expecting it to happen exactly like David did. And it doesn't. And it keeps us absolutely engaged and riveted until it does unfortunately happen. And we get a kind of a press conference in the middle of this with Fritz kind of on the outskirts watching all of this take place. And Kevin basically reassuring people that, you know, Mike's going to be back in the ring and everything's going to be okay. We really start to feel the pressures of what the ring causes around this family. I want to take this scene in particular to ask you guys, because this plays a huge narrative role in the movie. Liam, do you believe in curses? Do you think curses are real? Do you think the Von Erich curse specifically might have been real?
I think curses are real. I mean, I've seen enough movies based on true stories for me to think that. The Conjuring's come to mind for sure. And I just have friends who have been dealt a bad hand, and seemingly no matter how hard they work, they just consistently don't draw the right cards. So yeah, I mean, it's hard to, especially seeing what happened, and especially knowing too the end title card of like, you know, he had children and he didn't want them to take on the Von Erich name. And of course, they're wrestling today now under the Von Erich name. So whatever sin happened generations ago seems to have been cleansed from the lineage. But it's hard to not see the curse at hand when everything unfolds how it did.
Yeah. Ben, you a curse guy?
I'm not dumb enough to say that I don't believe in them, because if I say that I don't and they are real, then I don't want one on me. So yes, curses are real. But I think, you know, again, like whether or not like how accurate or real they are, it just showed how much it ate away at Kevin throughout the whole movie, the curse. Like, even if it wasn't real, like it was still, you know, it was like that guy, the wrestling meme, is like, it's real to me, damn it. You know, like that was like Kevin the whole time. It's like, yeah, this is the curse. Like it's affecting his life and his livelihood. So yeah, I think it's real for sure.
I love that little moment where Kevin, they have their son is born and he has to correct essentially the hospital and the last name that's on the birth certificate. And he pretty much doesn't take any advice from his wife and just basically says like, I can't have him have my name. It's just not going to happen. I, much like you guys, know better than to say that I don't believe in curses. Curses are definitely real. So that's a thing. The Ric Flair matchup, Ben, you mentioned this in the beginning. I thought pretty good, because like I don't really have like a base for Ric Flair other than like whatever pop culture, social media, Twitter gifs kind of like go around. I loved how pivotal of a play that this was in the movie. Really brought us into the third act really strong. And I like that Ric Flair meets them in the locker room after this, and especially the framing and the blocking and the camera in that locker room, I think is really important. Basically, we're just frozen on Fritz and the Von Erich brothers, and we don't stick with Flair at all. We just hear him as a nuisance, essentially, which really is what he is to this family. And his interview on TV, pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah, I don't like, maybe I need to walk back what I said. Like, I don't think he did a bad job. I think just like, it's an impossible task to do exactly as Ric Flair. Like, he was just so charismatic. I mean, it's just kind of always what his personality was through everything, styling and profiling, you know, like that's who he was. So it was like, oh man, this poor guy had an impossible task to achieve. I think he did a good job, you know, but yeah, it's just like, but to the scene itself, I think you're totally right. The locker room scene afterwards, like, oh man, you were great. This is awesome. It's like, I feel like he was really trying to kick your ass, you know, and then Ric Flair just like, that was awesome, man. I love it. Let's do it again.
Let's go get drinks.
Yeah, exactly. It's so good. He did a wonderful job.
Yeah. Aaron Dean Eisenberg, I believe is the actor's name. Because I spoke with Ric Flair earlier this fall, and I just talked to him about, you know, who was playing him, and they had never met. Rick was never on set. So I think that was probably not like ideal in terms of how he was going to approach this character. And also, Aaron had a very Herculean task, because Kevin Von Erich, like one of our first questions we asked on this podcast, what's your familiarity with the Von Erichs? You know, I'm a diehard wrestling fan. I know of them. I'm not super familiar with them. So Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, all these actors had the luxury of, okay, well, we won't do an impression because they're not recognizable enough to warrant an impression. We're able to make characters our own. Aaron, what choice does he have but to do a Ric Flair impression? Like, there is no amount of leverage he can have with someone like Ric Flair, because he's so recognizable. He's so noticeable. Also, something I love about that scene, and I wonder if this comes off for the casual wrestling fans. So like, Ethan, this would be a question to ask you, actually. Ric Flair as kind of the foil to the Von Erichs is so fascinating to me, because that moment too, he's like, oh, let's go out for drinks and all that. And I know that's just the tip of the iceberg for what Ric Flair would do. Like, he lived the rock star lifestyle. He's claimed that he slept with 10,000 women over the course of his career. And I honestly don't even think that that is an unrealistic number. And he's still, again, talk about chasing the high. He's currently on an AEW contract right now. And kind of sad when he comes out, because he doesn't have the mental strength that he used to, and not as good on the microphone and all that. Obviously, he's not wrestling anymore, but he's still chasing that high of the pop, you know, the moment when the crowd erupts, when your music goes off. And he's someone who he's had many near-death experiences and has made it out scot-free and is able to live the rock star life with the drugs and the alcohol and the women and all that. And on the flip side, Kevin Von Erich knows the second he even entertains anything like that, the second he has one night where he has one too many, it spirals out of control for his brothers. Yeah. So I thought that was fascinating. Of like, here's this dude who has had all the success in the world, the king of the territories, who is now making himself the king of WCW, which was at the time one of the biggest promotions in the world, is able to do whatever he wants and is able to celebrate however he likes. And the Von Erichs on the flip side, it's like, what am I even fighting for anymore? That's what Kevin feels. So I thought I'm curious to you, Ethan, did you notice kind of the foil of the two after reactions?
Yeah, I think that's why I bring up like the blocking and the framing of that scene in particular, is because like Flair comes in and does that, and we're with him for a minute, and we do kind of enjoy that energy for a second. We are much more focused on Kevin and Fritz and Carrie, basically hanging their heads and just being annoyed and pissed off and quite frankly feeling like failures because someone like Flair has gotten in their way, and someone that can just wrestle for wrestling's sake. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important thing that scene brings to the deep understanding of the Von Erich brothers and their family, is that it might not just be for wrestling's sake anymore. It is for like the history of our lineage, and it is for a functional relationship with my father, and it is for a functioning long relationship with my brothers. And like, there's more on the table. And when Flair comes into that scene, there's nothing more on the table for this guy. He's just wrestling because it's fun. He wants to go have drinks and like have a great time. And I think that is really interesting. And like, again, I think it would be really interesting to see this movie as like an 8-part miniseries, because then we get two and a half hours with this kind of nugget of the foil of the Von Erichs and Ric Flair and what that might mean to each of them. And we get to explore that a little bit more. I think that would have been really fun. Obviously, we only had 2 hours, but like, I think it does prove itself over the movie. Final couple here, selling the wrestling business. Kevin officially goes to his dad and is like, I'm out. I'm a family man now. I'm moving on. We got to sell this business. Very subtly says, like, I looked at the books. I never made what that book says that I made. I never got that amount of money. I think a really sly kind of pop of the villainy of Fritz in this situation, being very whiplashy, of being like J.K. Simmons in that movie, of just being like, you didn't deserve it until I thought you deserved it, and you weren't good enough until I said so. And really thought that the time spent in the ring, physically selling that space, living in it, selling it, moving on, was really emotional, impactful, and I thought was a really smart ascension to the final 20 minutes of the movie that really do take a pretty big tonal shift from what we've been previously experiencing.
Yeah, I thought it was a huge moment. You know, this may have been the equivalent of the drum throw kind of thing, because the dad's like, don't walk through that front door again if you sell this. Like, I spent my life building this up. Mm-hmm. He's like, listen, man, I'm a family man now. Like, I can't do this. I can't have the same passion about it that you did, if passion is the word you want to use, you know, but almost like this obsession about it. So powerful scene. Again, I think this just speaks to Efron and how great he was on screen, because this, like, all this stuff, you could see all this emotion in his face, and I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, I really don't have much else to add. This was the culminating moment, and it was also very cool to have Kevin come into his own, because for the longest time he was kind of just the dog on the leash. Like, no matter how much like freedom he seemingly had, he was always kind of resorting back to what his father wanted, even when you could see in his eyes that he was starting to develop his own spine, his own like conscious. And so, yeah, this was great. And it was also nice to see him unleash, right? Like, because essentially what we're talking about here eventually boils into him tackling Fritz and choking life out of him. And, you know, violence is never the answer, but I would be lying if I said that I wasn't rooting for you know, Kevin to get his in that moment.
Yeah.
Obviously, killing Fritz would have created more problems than solved, but it was good to, like, you know, I don't get along with my father all the time, and there are moments where it's like, I'm not a little boy anymore. It was cool to see Kevin remind, you know, Fritz of, like, listen, like, you saw in the first scene of this movie, I'm a hoss out here, like, don't push me around. And it was cool to see him step up to him.
That takes us to the final scene that I want to put on this list, is Carrie's suicide. Carrie gifts Fritz a gun, essentially for Christmas. And then proceeds to use that gun after we get a very emotional phone call between Carrie and Kevin. Basically, Carrie just like not being in a good headspace, and Kevin again finding himself in a situation in which he should be able to do more and he should be able to help, but just there is something blocking that ability to do that, curse or not, or, you know, emotional wherewithal or not. And then Carrie uses that gun. We get the moment where Kevin chokes out Fritz. And I think that is interesting to me because Fritz made that. Fritz deemed Kevin to feel that and to have that power and to have that big moment of recognition of like, you've done this to our family and I have to fix it. And I am the person. And I think that's really interesting in the context of like wrestling, because he couldn't be the wrestler he wanted to be because he had to be the family man that he needed to be to get his family out of that cycle. Carrie in a better place with David, Mike, and then their youngest brother, who I believe was 5, really fucking emotional scene. And then we get the final ending here where Kevin is a family man. He's at home. He's got his kind of his ranch, and his sons are running around, and they basically just tell him like, "We'll be your brother's dad," and that like that's just soul crushing. Like final moments, we get the big drone rays, which I think you know a very classic choice, but I think a smart choice in this situation, letting us sit with the scope of what we're seeing. Love the final 15 minutes, and I'll just say my true cinema moment is that kind of being in a better place with the brothers, Carrie feeling all of these things and realizing like they really did have it terrible. They really had a bad go and a bad draw and a bad curse.
And I mean, when he kneels down to the brother and he's like, "Oh, you must be my oldest brother," you know, because they lost him when he was like 5 years old or something. He's like, "Oh, Jesus, dude." Like, it was such a rough, I mean, it's a beautiful scene, but it's just like so hard to watch that. I'm going to go with that montage when Carrie starts joining them in wrestling, the whole Rush, you know, Tom Sawyer montage.
I like that.
I thought it was so well done. And it's probably my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah. My true cinema moment. I agree with you, Ethan. It's the better place. It's the afterlife. It the place beyond, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I vaguely mentioned it, I think, in my social reaction, that there was one moment that I think passes the Trinity test for me as movie scene of the year. I believe it's that, like, you just recounting it gave me chills. And yeah, I really don't have the words to describe how it makes me feel, because it's just all emotions at once. It's pain and sadness, but it's also happiness and bliss, and most importantly, peace. There's just a sense of like, man, it sucks that the life that you guys lived turned out the way it did, but I'm so happy that now you get to live here in this afterlife together on an even playing field with nothing to worry about. He knelt down to the oldest brother, who, as you know, based on what you believe in the afterlife, like, you are gonna appear as old as you ever get, or however old you choose to be. But when you only have 5 years to choose from, that's the year you choose. And man, that hit me to my core. What a beautiful,
really, really emotional, really good cap to the film. I think it does speak to all of our thoughts on the film that we've been talking about this for more than an hour now. That's not usually the case here on this show, especially for just like one single film. Real quick before we do A1 Acts, I'm just curious, Ben, we're getting ready to go into Oscar season. We're getting ready to switch over the pod here in just a few weeks to 24 Minutes of the Oscars. We're going to be covering that for a few months. The Iron Claw, do you foresee any dark horse, you know, energy coming from this movie over the next few months?
I would love to see Efron, you know, get some recognition for this. And maybe Holt McElhinney for supporting actor, Fritz. I think he was great. He did exactly what we needed him to do. He made all of us like really kind of despise him, you know, throughout this movie, and he did a great job at that. So, I would love any recognition that it gets, though.
What about you, Liam? Anything?
I think Efron is a dark horse to get nominated. That's Cillian Murphy's award to lose, though. So yeah. I just the notion of being able to, the next time Zac Efron's in a movie, having him as Academy Award nominee Troy Bolton, like, the best thing in the world to me. And I do believe if they're gonna do the full 10 nominations for Best Picture, this should absolutely be on there.
Interesting.
If they do a full 10 movies and this isn't on there, then the Oscars are a farce. And I say that with so much energy behind me, because good Lord, how do you not expand to, like, I understand if it's only gonna be five, but in recent years they've been doing 10.
They have to do 10 now. Yeah.
Oh, they have to. Okay. Yep. So if they have to do 10 and this isn't on there, I think that is absolutely that I would go into Oscar season betting on this to be among the 10.
Yeah. I'm really excited to have you on for our nominees list when this does not make the 10 best picture.
You don't think so?
Don't put it out there, Ethan.
Think it has no shot? Like,
I love this movie. I don't think it has a shot. And I think behind the scenes, good movie aside, and like whatever, you know, we feel for this film, I think A24 again finds themselves in a predicament and a pickle. They've got Past Lives that's really crushing the small awards circuits right now. And they have the Zone of Interest, which is going to be a huge player in the Best Picture race. They already have two movies that they're going to try and put some juice behind. I find it really difficult for them to toss out a third, especially when it just comes down to like marketing dollars and you know, for your consideration packages and screeners and what have you. I could see them going the Jeremy Allen White or the Zac Efron route and saying, like, for your consideration to be a nominee. I think that's where they find themselves as finding success for this movie. I do think it's going to catch a lot of fire at the box office. I think when it goes wide, the day this episode comes out, of course, we highly recommend everybody sees it. And I think it is truly one of the best movies of the year. It is a really tough best picture category this year, in my opinion.
Here's a flip side question for you. Do you think it makes more money than Aquaman at the opening weekend?
Oh, wow, shit. That's a question. I say this with a record of never seeing an Aquaman movie and never caring about Aquaman. I do think this makes more money than Aquaman. I think it's just, I mean, you've got the whole DC of everything, and that's a whole different conversation, obviously, but like, this screened really well. It made a lot of money in the very select few theaters that it was in. And I think this buzz with Efron being the guy now of like, watch out, you're going to cry. You will change your perception on Zac Efron. I think that puts this movie in that conversation to beat out Aquaman. I do.
Interesting. Yeah.
You think Aquaman's going to make more?
No, actually. And that's okay. Dying days of the DC universe. Yeah. Like, you saw what Shazam did earlier this year. I just think it would be a huge win for an A24, you know, award season contender artsy movie to beat out the December blockbuster. And I think it has a real chance of doing so.
I think the box office especially is in a really fascinating spot right now, with The Boy and the Heron being number one at the box office last weekend. The weekend prior to when this pod comes out. And then Godzilla Minus One winning the North American box office the weekend prior to that. Like, two foreign films. So I think people are changing, obviously, their box office ways. I think The Iron Claw is going to benefit from that pretty greatly. A1X, we've got two of them really quick. Zac Efron, and then we're going to do wrestling movies. Zac Efron, of course, The Iron Claw. The Greatest Beer Run Ever. Firestarter. Scoob. The Beach Bum. The Greatest Showman. The Disaster Artist. Another A24 flick. Let's not forget about that. Baywatch, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, Dirty Grandpa, Neighbors, The Lucky One, The Lorax, Charlie St. Cloud, Entourage, 17 Again, Hairspray, High School Musical, High School Musical 2, and High School Musical 3, Senior Year. Liam, I want to start with you. I feel like I know where you're going to go with this one.
And what is the prompt?
You got to choose. You got to choose what your A1 act for Zac Efron is. What's the one movie that you think he's the best in, or you hold near and dear to your heart the most? When you think of Zac Efron, what comes to mind?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I sung his praises so much in this movie, but I cannot get over how I feel when he sings Bet On It in High School Musical 2, man. Like, maybe it's nostalgia bias, but that's his crown jewel until the day I die for me.
I love it. That's awesome.
I respect that, yeah.
Hard not to pick this one. I'm sure it'll be this over time, but I'm going to go with Neighbors. I really enjoy that movie. I think he's hilarious in that. So that's what I'm going to go with. But yeah, shout out Disaster Artist.
I'm going to do what both of you couldn't do, and I am choosing The Iron Claw because he is he's really sublime in this. And I think it's interesting that, like, The Greatest Beer Run Ever was his movie before this. Pretty big movie made with Apple TV Plus. It ended up being like a Regal mystery movie is how I ended up seeing it. Tried to have a big theatrical, like, that tried to be something. I thought that movie was quite abysmal, to be honest with you. No fault to Zac Efron, but I think it's a really really huge flip to like be in that and then be in this. And I'm glad that he is in this. I'm glad it paid off for him. Wrestling movies. The Iron Claw. The Wrestler. Darren Aronofsky. Big fan, Ben?
Bigger than you, I think. I think we've established that. That's for sure.
Nacho Libre. Ready to Rumble. The Main Event. Paradise Alley. Rumble. Fighting with My Family. The Peanut Butter Falcon. And Win Win. This is a short list of course, not any documentaries, nothing, no live events, nothing like that. These are like true movies. About wrestling. Ben, do you want to go first?
Yeah, because I'm going off list and I am doing a documentary. I'm going to do Beyond the Mat, which yeah. I really enjoy. I mean, that again, speaking to my time as a wrestling fan, like that's the peak right there. Rock, Mankind, all that kind of stuff. So that's what I'm going to go with.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I Iron Claw is, for me, the best wrestling biopic ever told. Mm-hmm. If we were to go in documentary route, the WWE has a series called WWE 24, which is kind of like their docu-series. And the documentary about Edge's return to wrestling after 9 years away with a neck injury. I think it's called like Climbing the Mountain or something like that. But I get chills just thinking about it. And I had the honor of chatting with Edge, Adam Copeland, earlier this week at the Percy Jackson premiere. And just seeing how much he appreciates being alive. And getting to do what he loves and not having any physical setbacks anymore is really special. So if you're a wrestling fan or if you are becoming a wrestling fan as a result of the Iron Claw, do yourself a favor and check out Adam Copeland / Edge's WWE 24 documentary. There's clips all over YouTube too. You could probably watch it in 80 parts on TikTok as well.
Look, I don't have a documentary to put forth, but I will shock the audience, potentially. Shock you, Ben. I'm going with The Wrestler from Darren Aronofsky.
I like it.
Mickey Rourke is so good in that movie. Marissa Tomei is so hot in that movie. And the final moments, a man seeking that high that just can never be found again, is great. I'm pretty sure that's the only Aronofsky movie that I like, to be honest, and don't outright not enjoy. Good movie.
Which is a take for sure. It's definitely a take.
I feel like, how am I on the wrong side of history of this? This is terrible. Okay, A24 ranking, and then we'll get out of here. A through F24. You can add a plus, you can add a minus. Liam, what are you going to rank or rate this movie?
It's an A plus for me. Like I said, 5 out of 5 stars. It's my favorite movie of the year, and I stand by that it'll go down as one of those films that finds its way onto 100 essential films you got to watch to call yourself a film fan. Like this will be one of those movies that people talk about. And I think when it's all said and done, I mean, we're 3 years into the 2020s. This could be a defining movie of the decade. I think it could end up on those lists as well. So yeah, I got nothing but love for the Iron Claw.
I like it. Straight up A24 for me, without a doubt. This movie's wonderful.
I'm also going with a straight up A24. I currently have it ranked at 9 overall out of my 81 A24 movies that I've seen. I feel like it's pretty high, and I feel like that's definitely A24 worthy. I'm very excited to revisit this movie. It does go nationwide on December 22nd, so I can't wait to do that. I can't wait to see what A24 puts out merch-wise for this. AAA24 members got a little bit of a sneak peek in an email. It looks like we're getting a Von Erich Brothers zine coming up in the future, which is going to be really exciting. So I would say keep your eyes peeled for that. Should be really, really cool. Liam, thanks for coming on the pod, dude. I appreciate your really good insight into this and your energy. And I'm just, you know, so grateful that you could join us.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Thank you both, Ethan and Ben, for your flexibility as well, because a little behind the scenes, I had some travel woes on the day we were supposed to record this. And so we were very lucky to find a rain check day very quickly after. And yeah, again, I love talking A24. I love talking wrestling movies. I love talking wrestling. And this was a perfect marriage of everything. So thank you guys.
If people want to find more of you, Liam, where can they find you at?
Oh yeah, I'm at Liam T. Crowley on all socials. Mostly Instagram these days because Twitter is Twitter. But still, I'm pretty regular on Twitter and TikTok as well. Like I said, at Liam T. Crowley. And you've heard us mention it a couple times. I gotta plug it. If you're a Percy Jackson fan, let me be your guy.
Yeah, I love it. Highly recommend for following. I don't even know. I don't even have any connection to Percy Jackson. But every time you tweet something about it, I'm like, oh, I like that. That was cool. So very exciting stuff. Next week on the pod, We're hoping to talk about The Zone of Interest, what I consider to be one of the best films of the year. In my top 10 of the year of 2023, I was lucky enough to see it at New York Film Festival. It is very slowly making its way out across the nation, as A24 does with these late year releases. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed we can talk about it. Ben, I still don't have any showtimes in Portland, man.
No, nothing showing up in Salt Lake. If you don't have it in Portland, there's no way I've got it in Salt Lake. So who knows?
If anybody has the plug to The Zone of Interest or has a screener or anything, please give it to us. Because I really want to talk about it before we start talking about the Oscars. I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation and a very interesting Jonathan Glazer conversation. We've covered Under the Skin here before mm-hmm. on the pod. Criminally underrated movie. If we don't get the chance to talk about The Zone of Interest, we're going to be doing our top 5 A24 movies of 2023. So either way, it'll be a win-win. We'll see what happens on the next pod. But yeah, I'm excited. We're going to finish out the year strong, man.
Yeah, it's going to be good. If you have the connection, slide into those DMs, man. They are open. Let us know what you guys thought about Iron Claw. We are on Twitter and Instagram at 24 Minutes of A24. Also on YouTube, where you can watch all of our beautiful faces as we talk about this. Thank you, everybody, for your support. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.